So welcome to the Deputy Secretary General, who's here to brief you on the Somalia conference that took place in London earlier this week, and also, I believe, on your recent travels to Thailand and Singapore. So I believe we have about half an hour. So first of all, the Deputy Secretary General has some remarks, and then he'll take questions. Please, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Martin. Thanks for staying after the noon briefing. There's an expression in Europe, in Swedish at least, that whoever makes a trip has something to tell. And I'll just say a few things about my travels to Asia and to London for the Somalia conference this week. But last week I was in Bangkok for the ESCAP meeting, Economic and Social Commission for Africa and Pacific, a meeting that was very much organized by Nolin Heiser, our Undersecretary and Executive Secretary of ESCAP. It was discussions about cooperation with this very important region, but also, very interestingly, the potential of cooperation within or between, also between regions. And there were executive secretaries of the economic commissions from the other four parts of the world assembled, and this turned into a very important discussion about South-South cooperation, a new dynamic factor of the world economy. And I took a great interest in this and was reminded of, as always, the Charter, UN Charter, where Chapter 8 plays a very important role. Regional arrangements, I think we should take that very seriously. So apart from the dynamics of the regional cooperation, perhaps the most important meetings I had was a very substantial and very good meeting with the president of Myanmar, Thin Sien. And a meeting, I would also add, with Prime Minister Gusmão of Timor-Leste, and also a very interesting meeting with the Prime Minister of the Solomon Islands. I mentioned these three because they are of particular interest for the agenda of the United Nations in different respects. Myanmar is going through a period of reform. I think we all need to and should commend the efforts of the president of Myanmar in reforming his nation and also giving a place for Myanmar in the regional context and in the international context. He spoke openly about the need to bring Myanmar out of isolation. The disturbing elements in the development inside the country are obvious. You know, the Rohingya problems, of course, many of them are now abroad and not voluntarily wanting to return. I myself, by the way, negotiated return of 50,000 Rohingyas when I was Emergency Relief Coordinator in 1992. So it was for me sort of a reminder that this problem has been there for a long time and is still there. And the other issue, of course, which was of concern for the president and which we hope that he will handle in a positive way, and that is the communal violence that has been breaking out recently between the Muslim and Buddhist communities in another part of Myanmar. But all in all, it was a very good cooperation. He spoke very positively about his contacts with the Secretary General and with our representative, Vijay Nambiar, and was hoping very much for continued cooperation from the side of the United Nations. And I assured him, of course, of our interest in encouraging the reform process in Myanmar. On Eastern Timor, there is now a sense that they are through the political difficulties. They would rather have an accent on development than on peace and security. And they would very much like to strengthen the relationship with the United Nations on the economic side and the development side, and are interested in having a special advisor working with the government on behalf of the United Nations in the development area. Solomon Island I mentioned because we sometimes tend to forget a great number of countries small size countries, some call themselves a silent majority, very much often exposed on the margin of their existence when it comes to the climate change issues, and very much the victims of the ever more serious natural disasters, floods, hurricanes, well, you know it all. And I found it very interesting to be in contact with Solomon Island, representing not only itself, but also the small islands development states. And I hope they wouldn't mind that I was thinking of their situation with salt water entering their freshwater resources in the outer islands, the level of the sea rising, and that they are actually threatened in their very existence. And I could understand, I could feel really the passion with which they spoke about climate change and also the need for disaster risk reduction, being so exposed. And as I said, I would hope that they wouldn't mind that I was thinking of the metaphor of the canary in the coal mine. That these countries, so exposed, are there as canaries in the coal mine, giving us very, very serious signals about dealing with the threats to the environment and with the problems of climate change. And so that's why I wanted to mention this meeting with the Prime Minister of Solomon Islands. I'll turn to as quickly to the Somalia conference in London. It was a show of solidarity and support of the new leadership in Somalia. The president was met with great respect and appreciation of his efforts from the international community that was assembled in London. It wasn't sort of an event to raise funds for Somalia, but there were $300 million pledged for the security sector, which is, of course, very crucial in this moment when the Al-Shabaab problem is less dramatic but still there, if I may put it that way. It was also a show of support in the efforts of the president and his government to create a well-functioning federal state. Disturbing element was, of course, that the representatives of Somaliland and Puntland decided not to attend his delegation. We hope very much that all parts of Somalia and all factions, all clans of Somalia would see it in their interest to support the reform efforts of the president, who has been selected by all clans and all parts of the country at an earlier stage. So his challenge is, of course, to establish the authority in all of Somalia. And I think it's important for the international community to support this desire to create a well-functioning federal state. The second challenge for Somalia is to develop a neighborhood relations that is a positive one. If I go back to my own country, Sweden, if I were to explain our progress, apart from creating good institutions and good infrastructure and making big investments in education, I would say to be in a neighborhood which is very peaceful, where the dynamics of positive regional and neighborly contacts are making part of the social, political, and economic fabric, I think would be a main reason why we are where we are in the Nordic countries. If I then move to the Horn of Africa, I would say that the crucial relationship between Somalia and Kenya and Somalia and Ethiopia came out very strongly. And I was very glad to have very good meetings, apart with the president of Somalia, with the president of Kenya, President Kenyatta, and with the Prime Minister of Ethiopia. And I was encouraged by the growing dialogue between these three countries. And I would hope then that we would see a development with a strengthened direction of a federal, well-functioning Somalia, supported by the new structure of the UN after the Security Council decision 2 weeks ago. And also a relationship with neighbors that will also help Somalia continue on the reform path. It is good for once to say that we have good news from Somalia, and I would hope that the support to the new government in Somalia would be widespread so that we could help this new government to succeed in their efforts. I think, Martin, this could suffice as my introduction, and then I could take question on whatever you would like to ask about.
Yes, Tala.
Thank you, Deputy Secretary General. It's clear that in Somalia, security is linked to food insecurity. And I'm wondering if there's any discussion about real-time food initiatives that are being implemented, because what we hear about so often from that country is malnutrition and so many deaths from a lack of proper food.
Well, thank you. I was there in 1992. This was the closest to hell that I have ever been personally. Hundreds of thousands of people died. They died even inside the camps that I visited at that time. And at that time, the crisis was both a political crisis, civil war-like conditions, and an enormously serious food and water security crisis. We have had another outbreak of a similar situation some years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when 280,000 people died, and half of them children under the age of five, where there was mainly a food security crisis, as you pointed to. Still, the problem of Shabab was there. It was not as deep as the crisis in 1992, but of similar nature. And in my speech on behalf of the Secretary General in London, I recalled what had happened in 1992. I recalled what had happened 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. And I said, this must never happen again. So we hope that this meeting would be a call for action to help in the particular aspect that you raised with, the first of all, the physical security, and secondly, also with the humanitarian crisis. There is still millions of people in need of humanitarian assistance. And as usual, as you probably have heard here many, many times, our appeals are not met to the degree that we would wish. World Food Programme is carrying on a programme which is not fully funded. OCHA is also working very actively. And we need to also remember that we have a humanitarian imperative to follow. And many of the statements in London were supportive of the humanitarian programmes and pointed also to the food security issue that you raised.
Okay, I think I saw Evelyn's hand up, and then I'll come to you, Jill. Yes.
A couple questions on Somalia. Did you say that Somaliland and Puntland, they boycotted the London conference as well as boycotting the government, or did they attend the conference? And secondly, did you have any discussions on that horrific refugee center on the Kenyan border that the Somalis are drifting into, which has been really dreadful for women?
Yes, it is correct that the Somaliland decided not to join the delegation. They were asked by the president to join and given all the good reasons to join. But they have ambitions that go beyond autonomy, that go beyond taking part of a federal structure. In the case of Puntland, there was high hopes that they would join, because Puntland actually, as I've understood, has accepted to be part of a federal structure with probably advanced autonomy, I suppose. But they also decided to stay away. And this was openly stated by the Somalis and regretted by most. But I would hope that the conference in itself was a message also to Puntland and Somaliland that it would be much better for their own future and for Somalia as a whole to take part in these type of discussions and be part of the international solidarity that was so clearly expressed in their direction at the meeting. The horrific refugee situation that you referred to in the border areas between Kenya and Somalia were discussed, on my part, mainly with the president of Kenya. who was very dramatically describing the refugee pressures on Kenya and the difficulties that his country was going through, not least because of the pressures on border areas and of course the need for funding for these camps, but also that he really felt also there was a danger that it created reactions among local communities against the Somali refugees, and that this was a problem that was also felt politically in the capital. He also referred to the fact that there was common history of the clans across the border, and that there was solidarity going both directions. So he clearly indicated that this problem was a problem of a humanitarian nature, but also of a social and political nature. His explanation of the conditions probably have to be found in that fact, the fact that the country was under tremendous pressure. But that is how the matter came up from my side.
Okay, Joe, and then George.
Could you elaborate somewhat on in your discussions with the president of Myanmar regarding any specific steps that he might have mentioned in integrating the disaffected minority groups into the government further, and also in beefing up security and law enforcement when riots break out and attacks on minorities break out?
I would put it in the context of his efforts to bring about a reduction of violence in the country and achieving ceasefires with the different areas that where fighting has been going on, to create secure conditions in the country through ceasefires and negotiations with the different groups, was mentioned, Kachin and other, Karens and others. He also mentioned that the country was a country with many, many minorities. I think over 130 minorities are registered as minorities and given rights as Myanmari. However, the Rohingyas are not recognized as a minority. This goes back a long time. A discussion has been going on, but that was the reason I was there 21 years ago to negotiate, because there are doubts among the government about the many about Rohingyas coming in great numbers not long ago, but more recently. I at that time found that the people that I was negotiating return for had been there for many years and also had identity cards to prove it. But this is almost the same problem today, that they are not recognized as a minority and that they more or less have to prove that they have been there for some time. And this suspicion among, unfortunately, poor part of the majority Buddhist population leaves the danger that you will have an ethnic and even religious dimensions involved in this issue. And I know the president is very concerned. He spoke out very strongly after the communal violence, and I commended him for that. And he is, of course, apropos the last part of your question, very much with his background, anxious to see that law and order prevails. So I would hope that this desire to see security established and law and order established would lead to the reduction of such incidents that we saw so seriously some weeks ago.
Okay. George and then Matthew.
Mr. Deputy Secretary General, I'd like you to elaborate, if you can, just a bit on this issue of neighbor relations and your discussions with Mr. Kenyatta. As you know, I represent the Nation Media Group in Nairobi in East Africa, all three countries. Are there plans for any security cooperation and, are there perhaps any Kenyan aid projects to their neighbors to the northeast? What do they have in the pipeline? What is being done? And I understand, it strikes me, that the Kenya situation is very much like the Jordan situation. some hundreds of miles to the north, because they're overwhelmed by people from the country next door. What can you tell me about that and the possibilities there for?
No, you're right, in a way that these problems are pretty similar. You know, the if there is a conflict like in Syria, the horrors in Syria, it has automatic repercussions on, in this case, Jordan and Lebanon, mainly, but also Iraq and Turkey, and also creates the risk of a regional crisis of large proportions. In the same way, around Somalia, with this, with the period with the Al-Shabaab taking, choosing a military road to go, and also planting road, you know, planting bombs, and just the state attorney was killed in an explosion the other day, and 8 to 10 Somalis died in another explosion. That type of life has, of course, led to great refugee flows, and you have that very visibly in Kenya. But then there is also the historic relationship between that part of Somalia, which is neighboring to Kenya. You may recall that there was a strong Kenyan action around Kismayo some months ago, when the Al-Shabaab were dominating the city, and the Kenyan action led to the Shabaab leaving the city. So they also play a role for the security of the country. But there are also tendencies in that part of the of Somalia to expect more of autonomy as other parts of the country request. And here's where Kenya can play a very important role in making sure that that problem does not become not only a refugee problem, but also a problem for the federal state of Somalia. I would hope that we would have a situation where the federal government would establish its authority fully in Kismayo and that part of the country, and that there will be cooperation between Kenya and Somalia in this regard.
Okay, Matthew, and then...
Let me also mention, by the way, something I should have mentioned in my introduction. There is still a very important role for AMISOM, the force of African states that play an absolutely crucial role. And here I want to really pay tribute to the countries and their soldiers who paid such an enormously heavy price. You would be shocked to learn that maybe it's up to 2,000 to 3,000 AMISOM soldiers that have been killed during these years that AMISOM has been there. Uganda, Burundi has paid a tremendous price. So I really want to pay tribute to AMISOM and to their role also. And the Kenyan troops are, of course, also to a large part of the AMISOM.
Just for reference, Mr. Deputy Secretary General, you say there have been 3,000 soldiers of AMISOM killed. That's out of a total complement of how many?
I don't know the exact number. I think it's about...
We can get that.
Yes, I think it's around 17,000. I'm not sure.
Matthew, and then Tim, and then after that, Lou.
Sure.
Yes, Matthew.
Okay, great. Thanks for doing this after this trip. It's useful. I wanted to know if, in your discussions with Uhuru Kenyatta, they've made a request to the Security Council to have the International Criminal Court proceeding deferred for a year or suspended. And I wanted to know either if this was raised in your meeting or if you have any thoughts on they were saying that it would be a danger to regional security to continue it. And also, I know that you're the head of this review panel on the Charles Petrie report on Sri Lanka, and I wanted to know, I think that was announced back in December, what have you found, where does it stand, what improvements or reforms have been made? Thanks.
Thank you very much. The matter was not raised, and we are taking the stand that we should be in contact with President Kenyatta. It's a very important actor, of course, in the African scene. He's just been elected president in Kenya. He is absolutely crucial for the developments in Somalia, and it was an important meeting. And the ICC aspect we are, of course, completely aware of, but it seems to me that he cooperates fully with the court, and As long as this cooperation is as good as it is, there are no problems for us to deal with the president of Kenya, and I had a very good meeting with him. On the Charles Petrie's report on Sri Lanka, it was taken very seriously by the Secretary General, made public also, and I was asked by him, the Secretary General, to head a group to go through the recommendations of the report, and above all look forward to the future so that we avoid coming in such situations as we did in Sri Lanka and as we have in several other tragic situations. This group was established in January, and they have worked very diligently. It's co-chaired by Andrew Gilmore of my political unit and Paul Akiwumi, my chief of staff. And we have a very good secretariat headed by Michael Keating, who is a very respected colleague, who was the deputy SRG in Afghanistan. And what I found most important was to bring in all the agencies, departments, programs, funds, who indirectly or directly are involved in the situation or the role of the United Nations in Sri Lanka. So we have had a working group with representatives of all groups working very intensely on taking these recommendations seriously. We also have invited experts from the outside for hearings. Today I had a hearing with a group of very respectable colleagues of mine and many others, Jan Egeland, Staffan de Mistura, Michael von Schulenberg. I can't give you the whole list, but we had a video conference of 1.5 hours today where we got their reactions to the report. So it's being processed right now, and I suppose I will, within a month or so, receive the report, and then it is up to me to assess these recommendations and go to the Secretary General and discuss what measures should be taken. And I hope this whole process will be finished by the middle of June at the latest, I would hope. We take it very seriously. I think we have, of course, situations today where all these questions come up. I mentioned Myanmar, but above all, I think about Syria. And we need to really prepare ourselves as good as possible for this type of situation in the future.
Okay, so Tim and then Lou, maybe I could ask you to both ask your questions and then the Deputy Secretary General will respond. So first of all, Tim.
Okay, thank you for coming, sir. You mentioned that you met the Ethiopian Prime Minister. Did he say when he will be withdrawing his troops from Somalia? And did you ask him to delay that at all? And also you mentioned the crisis in Syria briefly. Does the UN expect any kind of meeting following the Russia-US agreement? Does the UN expect any kind of meeting on Syria by the end of the month, as some people have mentioned?
And Lou?
Thanks. Also, following up on what Tim said, regarding the meeting, I'm wondering if the UN envisions that the joint special representative, Lakhdar Brahimi, will play a role, a key role in that. And I wanted to ask you, too, if you've been following reports that the Iranian government has confirmed the detention of a senior Iranian diplomat who spent many years working in multilateral organizations, Bagher Asadi. He was posted here for quite a while, and he is linked to the reformists, and he's been held for almost 2 months, and no one really knows why. Since he spent so much time in the UN, or accredited to the UN system, just wondered if the UN had any looked into it or was aware of it.
Okay. I talked to the Prime Minister of Ethiopia about the Ethiopian troops. There had been a very sad incident some time ago, not recently in fact, where the Ethiopian had left a town, and only hours afterwards the Al-Shabaab troops, forces, militants came in, and four people were beheaded within a couple of days, who evidently were not agreeing with the philosophy of the Al-Shabaab. And I think that says it all. The Prime Minister did not accept that the word withdrawal would be used. He felt that they would take their responsibility and that they would stay as long as needed. And I think this is a sign of the growing cooperation between Ethiopia, the government of Ethiopia and the government of Somalia, that they, if they can play a role in reducing the threat from the Al-Shabaab, which is their main objective, then they will stay. They hope that that threat will be reduced by both factors that are related to security and, of course, growing better conditions in the country, so that that factor, that the Al-Shabaab will not have sort of a good soil in which they have been thriving. But I think the Ethiopians take a very responsible position, and they will, of course, stay only if the Somali government would want them to stay. The second issue, I think Martin probably answered that question earlier, but what has happened is very intensive contacts the last 24 hours or so, conversations that you probably have referred to for the Secretary and between Secretary Kerry and Foreign Minister Lavrov on the side of the Secretary General. Several conversations with our joint special representative, Lakhdar Brahimi, both today and yesterday. We are, of course, commending this initiative. We've been waiting for it for a long time and pushed very hard for a negotiated transition, a negotiated process, because we see very much the risk that there is a belief that there could be a military victory. First of all, we doubt whether a military victory is possible, particularly within the near future. And secondly, that the risks of an explosion of revenge could lead to an even worse situation. So this is welcome. This is good news that the Americans, U.S. and Russia have come to this, come forward with this initiative. We now have, of course, challenges ahead of us. So lots of work that has to be done. The Secretary General takes it very seriously and has asked the Joint Special Representative to stay on, and he has accepted to stay on. And we also have, of course, a strong team in the United Nations that work very now intensely with this matter. We also hope now very, very much that all partners will take this, seize this opportunity and really contribute to a political settlement. That is the challenge that we now will have to mobilize everybody to go for the political road rather than the military road. I hope that we will now have momentum going in that direction. The Secretary General is prepared to play the role that he's asked to do, and he sees his own responsibility and accepts that responsibility.
Okay.
I have no knowledge of that, but I would be interested myself in finding out more.
Okay. All right. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is about Singapore, but never mind. We ran out of time.
Oh,
too late.
I also visited Singapore on my trip and discussed Myanmar also.
Do you think the Russian participation in this process is really credible in view of their continuing aid in Syria?
Say that again.
Do you think of the Russian participation, Mr. Lavrov with Mr. Kerry,
yeah,
really credible in view of the long-standing and continuing Russian aid to the military and to the Syrians?
Well, I would hope so. They have agreed to contribute to the political process. So
we've said it all repeatedly and just now that the U.S. and Russian role with this initiative is to be highly commended. I have something on the
Okay. Great.